Welcome to the FishExplorer.com's Fly Fishing Podcast. This is a show where we talk about everything from how to fish, where to fish, what to fish for, and whatever else we want to talk about. We will talk to the legends of fishing, guides, fishermen, and anybody else who wants to talk fishing. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Good morning, evening, afternoon, everybody out there in Fish Explorer land. This is Tim Fishman Emery. You have found us on the fishing podcast here at FishExplorer.com. We are your number one resource for fishing information in Colorado. And soon to be, coming soon and making the announcements here and there, we will have all the rivers or the major drainages of the rivers on our site as well. That will be coming online here in the next week or two, which is exciting news, which leads me into kind of something else exciting is ISE, International Sportsman's Expo, which is coming January 7th through 10th. 2010. It's earlier this year, so if you haven't made plans to get there, you need to make plans. It's actually going to be about a week away, actually a week from the time you're listening to this airing of the podcast will be at ISE. So that is going to be a great event, and that leads me to my guest for this week, who is the up-and-coming bright star of the fly fishing industry, especially in Colorado and throughout the whole country. He's an author, a guide, a TV star, movie star. He has been teaching people all over the place how to catch and find fish, especially big fish. He has a new book coming out called Sight Fishing for Trout. Our guest this week is none other than Mr. Landon Mayer. Landon, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Tim? Thanks for having me on, and hope everything is going well on the holidays for you.
It's going very well, and getting busy with ISE coming up, and you're one of the features at ISE. You're going to have a bunch of presentations. What are those presentations you're going to be doing to the general public at the Fly Fishing Theater and so on?
The first one I'll do, which is going to be on Friday, is Seeing the Fight. It'll be a detailed look into the sight fishing book on how to make the adjustments based on what you see the trout's movements are in the water throughout the course of a fight. So it's a detailed look and step-by-step instruction. And then on Saturday and Sunday...
Landon, I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you. So you're talking about the true ability that you're fighting the fish, not just hooking the fish.
Absolutely, yeah. From the hook set, adjusting to the movements throughout the fight, from head shakes to runs, battling fish around structure, all the way to the end where you try to get them in the mesh or get them into the net. So it's a step-by-step process throughout the course.
Well, that's something that, you know, hasn't really – I don't think I've ever really seen anybody discuss that more than, you know, keep your rod tip up and let them run, because that's all I told my clients when I was guiding. So it really gets in-depth telling you how – what you're supposed to do fighting the fish. Does it talk about angles and directions and so forth?
Absolutely, yeah. Angles of the rod tip based on where the trout's moving, direction of where the trout's moving up or downstream, following along, and really allowing your arm to become an extension of the rod and being able to adjust to the power and pressure applied to the light tip, et cetera, often used in a lot of the tailwater drainages in Colorado and abroad across the U.S.
That's something amazing. And if you're out there listening right now, that is something that you need to go see. That's Friday. Did you say Friday afternoon?
Yeah, Friday afternoon at the show. I believe it's going to be second to last presentation, but it'll be an hour long, and I'll go in depth, and I'll try to discuss all the details that I try to use on the water myself and with clients, and I'll have a Q&A afterwards to where I can answer any questions anybody might have.
You know, that's huge, because, you know, when people talk to me about how many fish they broke off or how many fish they lost, you know, everybody always talks about, you know, the fish they caught, the fish they lost, and why, and they don't know why they lost their fish, but people come to me and tell me that they lost 15, 20 fish a day. You know, and I'm at that point where I think I've got it figured out, and I don't lose many fish anymore, and maybe that's just because I've been practicing so long, but I think this is something huge for the fishermen out there.
Yeah, it's big in the sense that when you're done with the fight, whether it results in you landing the fish or a break-off, you learn what went wrong or what went right, and you basically build a template to where you have a step-by-step process to where you know that the fish will move a certain way. You need to adjust to that movement. If the fish runs a certain way, you can adjust to that movement. And in addition to that, if you're dealing with small trout or you're dealing with large trout, fish first react by head shaking, but head shakes from a small fish are fast and abrupt, and head shakes from a large trout are slow and often lagging. So being able to adjust to the different power that's applied and make the proper movements really helps quite a bit. And I think that's the learning curve that helps anglers in the industry, is not just the successful battles where you land the fish, but the ones where you lose the fish is honestly where I think you learn the most.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry to interrupt there. Go on. What were we talking about?
No worries.
Stuff like that just fascinates me, that, you know, we're getting to the point where we're starting to educate people really in depth. And, you know, there are a lot of people studying this stuff like you and designing ways to teach this to people, which is just huge. And it's going to make everybody's fishing that much better, which is fantastic.
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing, too, with landing trout and fighting trout is the faster you can get them in the net, the healthier the fish is when you release them. And that's going to supply our rivers with more populations of quality trout, which in the end is the main goal with catch and release. That's the main objective there for sure.
Great. So what else are you going to be doing at ISE?
I'll do another presentation on sight fishing for trout. And on sight fishing, I'm going to try to emphasize on the short game, where you're casting short distances from 5 to 15 feet and learning how to make the adjustments with tension drifts, casting strokes where you're not able to load the rod with the fly line. You have to manipulate movement of your body and the arm, and just really go into detail on situations where you may see a fish that's 2 to 3 feet in front of you, and how to get in position to make the presentation without spooking the fish, number one, and then also being able to apply different presentations outside of a drag-free drift, which we all learn from the basics. It will take you a step further into detail and know how to learn the long game and the short game combined to really, you know, improve your skills as far as presentations and getting the fish to take the fly.
And this is a fairly newer concept, probably in the last 5 years. A lot of this originated over in Europe with the national championship guys, with Czech nymphing and Polish nymphing, French nymphing, all kinds of different techniques that they've been using for years. And the Europeans, if I'm not mistaken, use these techniques because their fish, they don't have as healthy as rivers as us, so they don't have as many fish as we have. So they had to learn how to catch more fish and be really efficient with their fishing, and that's what this type of technique really works on, is the efficiency of the catch, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's more of emphasizing that presentation is more important than fly selection, and it's important to get the flies to the fish correctly. And I think one of the biggest differences is on a lot of our waters, we are so accustomed to high stick nymphing or supplying false cast where there's a lot of movement above the target, which is the trout. And if you can eliminate that movement and eliminate any objects that the fish can detect, then you can quite frankly even catch fish 3 feet in front of you as long as they don't detect anything unnatural. And that's all applied by being able to get a proper presentation. And if that takes, you know, no mends and just swinging your flies through the run, fish aren't afraid to take a fly that's moving, especially when it's in prime season or you're matching a hatch.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of these techniques kind of remove some of the big things, you know, for beginning fishermen. You know, when I started learning how to nymph techniques, I used a big strike indicator, two flies, two, three BBs or split shots. And as my beginning career, I remember being tangled up and knotted a ton. I also made a ton of false casts. And these type of techniques really remove a lot of those knots and a lot of those thoughts from the fishermen, for the beginning fishermen. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I think going away from the strike indicator to where you're using a hopper instead of an indicator in the water, or eliminating the strike indicator altogether to where you're relying on the trout taking the fly and seeing that visual and then reacting to set the hook is key. And, you know, it's not to say that false casting and drag-free drifts are not important and effective, which they are, but I think more fish are becoming pressured and spooking out, not because they're seeing the fly and they're seeing presentations. I personally believe it's because of the amount of anglers on the water and the movement that they see above makes them wary to think that there's predators in any area and causes them to sulk down on the bottom or spook out of the run and stop feeding. So that's the main goal, is to eliminate yourself from becoming the predator that's being seen by the trout.
It's an amazing thing that the concepts that we're hearing about have gone, you know, tenfold from, you know, when we were both probably starting out. It was all match the hatch, small flies, get us perfectly to that fly, drag free drifts and so forth. Now we're going, changing back to the ways it was kind of in the 60s and 70s, where, you know, you're continuing to have a connection with your fly, you're controlling your line a lot more and so forth. It's kind of this ebb and flow of fly fishing. Is that kind of what you're finding? And especially when you talk to guys like Ed Angle and Dorsey and those guys, is there a lot of that talked about?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's pretty interesting when you talk to a lot of the greats in our industry that have been around for 20 to 50 years, and they talk a lot about recycled information and recycled techniques, and it's definitely a way that the industry evolves, is to take something that they used to do in the past, like swinging flies to you know, tension drifts, and applying them in different ways and different rivers and different approaches. And I think being able to tweak what you're recycling from the old to the new just gives people more tools to have in their box and be more successful on the water. And guys like Ed Engel and John Barr, who have seen these techniques used in the past and then switched over and come to fruition again, I think it's important for anglers to understand that that's really the whole main goal of our industry, is to teach and evolve. And when you're on the water, just trying something new and not being afraid to do it is who's going to make you more successful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Hey, Landon, the last 4 or 5 months, Terry Wickstrom and I and Chad LaChance and a bunch of guys have been talking about on the radio the difference between, you know, conventional fishing and using the flies to catch lots of fish and bigger fish in particular, and talking about how you can try and meld best of both worlds, because the conventional guys are looking for reaction strikes while fly fishermen are looking for to feed the fish. What's kind of your theory on that? Do you see a lot of the similarities between the conventional and the fly?
Yeah, I really do. Even if you take it and you're trying to refer from bass to trout, I mean, bass are reaction-based strikes the majority of the time, and trout are the same way. I think a good example of that is, you know, if you were to drift in a run, you start out the beginning of your drift drag free, and then the tail end of your drift, you swing your flies, and a lot of people are surprised, and they have the what we call the no-look take, where they lift up to make a cast, and all of a sudden the fish hits the fly. I think it's when fish see any type of a food source that they know they can consume. Sometimes they're going to be lazy depending on water temperatures and they want the flies to be fed to them, but especially during the summer months when flows are high, fish aren't afraid to take a fly that's being twitched through the water, a fly that's being swung through a run, and anything that's going to supply movement, because they have cover. And more important than that is that they see it's a food source that's going to supply them the nutrients that they're going to lose when they expend the energy to come and take the fly itself. So I see a very big similarity, and especially when you go to larger food imitations like sculpins or crayfish or crane fly larvae, fish aren't afraid to move to come and take those. It's just learning how to present them properly and, quite honestly, timing the right time to be in the water when the flows are high or the light's low and the fish aren't as spooky and wary. It's amazing how much the fish are willing to come up and take a fly. And I think the best example of that is night fishing with mice patterns on the surface, and to see how the fish react then versus when sunlight's out, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and you fish a lot of the tailwaters, the Cheesemans and so forth. One of my theories that I'm preaching about, and whether I'm wrong or right, I don't really care, but I think bigger flies are kind of coming back in the style, using, you know, not huge, but 16 pheasant tails and 14 pheasant tails on these tailwaters. Not all the time, but a lot more than we're used to, because, you know, people talk about the size 20s and 22s and 24s and 26s. You know, I'm getting to that age where I can't tie them on the end of my fly line anymore, or my tippet, and I can't hardly see them or pick them up. So I'm starting to move to bigger flies. Is that something that you may see things going on, or do you still believe that it's really during the winter, during the slow times, it's really important to match the hatch as close to it as possible?
I think it's a mix of both, but I've always been a firm believer that the size of the fly is not going to result in the size of the fish or how productive you are. I think larger flies are very important. A good example of that is when you deal with migratory fish that come out of reservoirs or large bodies of water. In the springtime, when they come out of the reservoirs, they're used to eating a size 12 or 16 chironomid. When they come into the river system, they're supplied with smaller midges. But one of the ways I've been able to be successful with clients is actually presenting the larger flies like a size 16 midge instead of a size 22. And because the fish are accustomed to seeing it, they're willing to take the fly. And, you know, when you're dealing with the river fish, I mean, think about red quills and think about green drakes and how large the nymphal stage of that insect is. And by imitating that, the fish are familiar to seeing larger flies, and it's a bigger meal, and a bigger meal produces more protein. So I think large flies is a great way to approach casting and presenting to these fish. And if you're wanting to break the mold from smaller imitations, then going large, sometimes that's how you do get that reaction strike. So I think that's very important.
Good deal. Hey, back to ISE, which is January 7th through the 10th of 2010, you're going to stop by the Fish Explorer booth, sign your new book, which is great. The book's called Sight Fishing for Trout. People are going to be able to buy it and really kind of get to know you a little bit better. You're going to be available at 3 o'clock on Thursday, January 7th, and at 12 o'clock on Sunday, I believe January 10th. So that's going to be a cool thing, and you can sit there and visit with people. We'll probably have you on the couch hanging out because I know you're going to be tired after a long weekend. But it's an opportunity for folks out there that are listening to this to really get to know you and talk to you a little bit more one-on-one instead of being in that big seminar situation where you're kind of intimidated if you don't want to ask questions or something like that. So we appreciate that, and that should be a fun time. And like I said, you'll have your book to sign there for people to buy, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And anytime that I'm around the show, if anybody has any questions or comments or anything that they need a discussion about outside of the seminars, then I'll be available at your booth on those two time frames on Thursday and on Sunday. And then also, too, whenever they get a chance to see me, if I'm moving about the show, then feel free to ask a question. And my main emphasis and goal in this whole community and industry and my career is to teach. So anytime I can supply anglers with information, I'm more than happy to do so.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And you know, one thing from my point of view is that all the guys in the industry that are out there are really friendly and really want to teach you and help you. And so if you see somebody running around, one of us running around, stop us. Don't be afraid to ask us questions. Don't be afraid to say hi. Find out what we're doing. We'll give you probably all of our secrets because I don't think any of them really are secrets. But we'll help you out wherever we can. And that includes anybody in the industry that I've come across. I haven't come across a mean guy yet in our industry.
No, I think everybody's really, really nice. And I think their information that they're willing to supply is huge. And I would say after traveling around the U.S. in the last 3 or 4 years that Colorado is one of the biggest markets in the fly fishing industry just because there are so many good instructors and teachers here. And the community of anglers, we're all one big family. And we want to share that same family experience and knowledge to others. So every day on the water is a successful day, and if you can be supplied with more information to increase the odds, then, you know, the more the merrier. So absolutely, that's absolutely true.
Well, Landon, we're running out of time. I appreciate it, and I'm getting excited for ISE. It's always a fun time for us. It's a lot of work, but it is a lot of fun to meet our people that we know in the industry, people we don't know, new friends, new fishing partners. It's a great time for us. So, again, I'll have all the information about your appearances on our website. We'll be looking for you, and we'll put your schedule up there so that they can come see you at the other times through the ISE, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Tim, and have a happy new year. Look forward to seeing you at the show as well.
You too. Thanks, buddy. You know, one of the new things going on in the world of fly fishing is really getting technical and getting down and dirty with these secrets. And Landon Mayer is definitely on the cutting edge of the new way to fish and really catch more fish, be more efficient. So it was a great podcast. Good to know that he's around and doing this stuff. And you can see him at ISE. He will be at our booth signing autographs on Thursday at 3 o'clock and then I believe sometime Sunday as well. So you'll have to check the ISE primer page here on fishexplorer.com. Of course, you got to find out everything going on at ISE. It's going to be a great, huge event. It's Friday Night Bites. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be have a field editors panel. There's going to be beer. There's going to be a keg of beer sponsored by TrophyRoom.com. So make sure you get there in time to get some of that. We've got one keg, so it may run out. So you be there quick, and you'll get a couple beers. It's definitely going to be a fun night. We'll be giving away stuff from all kinds of different peoples, including a fly rod from Elkhorn Fly Rods. Elkhorn has donated a fly rod. It's going to be great. We'll be giving that away at the end. Marika Izumi will be doing a hot seat type of thing. She's a cute gal from World Fishing Network, so you'll definitely love that. And it's going to be an all-around great show. Like I said, I'm doing some fishing panels, fly fishing in Denver. If you want to know where to go fly fishing in Denver, close to home, come see our panel 1:30 Saturday afternoon at the Fly Fishing Theater. I'll be there along with Barry Reynolds, Barry Reynolds, Michael Gracie, Kerry Carriger, Paul Winkle will also be there. So it's going to be a great event, something that you definitely want to stop by and see. We're also going to be doing a carp fishing panel at the Tank at 3:30 that same Saturday. So you'll want to be there. I've got Barry Reynolds doing that, Will Rice, Chris Galvin also, a guy named Andrew Green who is going to be talking about Euro-style techniques. You know, carp fishing is huge over in Europe, and he will be discussing those techniques and showing them to you. So all kinds of great stuff going on at ISE if you're going to be there all weekend long. There are discount tickets available on the site. Save $2. Make sure you bring your friends, your kids, and anybody else who may even have an interest in fishing, any sort of fishing. So it's a great thing to be a part of. And, you know, until next week, and next week we'll have to see what happens. I've got a lot of busy enough stuff going on. If I don't show up next week, that's because I love you guys and I'm at the ISE show. And I will probably be doing some live recordings from the ISE show. So we'll get a lot of people interviewed in the next couple weeks. So in the meantime, if you have questions or comments about anything going on at Fish Explorer, please email me at tim@fishexplorer.com. And if you are coming to one of my panels and have some questions, please email them to tim@fishexplorer.com and I'll get them answered for you. So in the meantime, make sure you get out there and go fishing.